All right, good morning, folks. It's now 5:05 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Welcome to the Dead Man's Coffee Club. I'm Tyler Fleming. This is Anthony
Fisher. How are you?
Let's get to it.
How you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm still waking up. It's been an hour, but I still feel like I'm waking up. How are you?
I'm feeling similar. feeling similar, but I'm fortunate enough that I don't have to go to work, so you have to go to work.
Oh, I've got to go to work. This is day six, so I am pumped. It's going to be a good day, though. We're going to get up the road, see some family, which I'm really looking forward to. I'm looking forward to some time with my girls.
Nice.
So, yeah, just got to get through the work day, and all my dreams can come true.
There you go.
Cool, cool. So, we had, and we'll probably still talk about this at a different point in time, and it kind of, I mean, the conversation we're going to have today is still relevant for it.
Maybe the most relevant thing, or I don't know. For me, it's one of the more relevant pieces to who I am, but you shot me a text yesterday, you know, like, you want to talk about this? And I think we both agree that it is time that we talk about it and then we just get to it. So, do you want to set the stage for us?
Yeah, man. Hold on, my computer is making noises.
It's all good.
Okay. It is now not making noises. Yeah, so yesterday, I was on Instagram, and a good friend of mine had a small post regarding a gentleman named Desmond Mero, and I'd never heard this name before, but I saw the name and I kind of felt the inclination to to see what was going on. Google his name. A ton of articles are coming up, and what has happened is that from an incident that I believe they're saying happened in early December of last year, video footage is now coming up of Mr. Marrow, who's a black man, being handled and mistreated by three white police officers. He seems to be compliant with the officers during the arrest, but the way that he is treated raises a lot of questions. And it's a conversation that I think we shy away from, especially people who look like us, white folks. You know, we shy away from it. We feel like we don't have a place in this conversation when in reality, we're players in it. And it's something that ought to have our attention. It ought to be talked about. And I'm excited that we're talking about it. I'm really glad about that, because I think that for the few listeners we have, hopefully it will start a conversation or at least start them to thinking of these things as mattering in their own lives and not just, you know, isolated and kind of relegated to, you know, videos and news stories. This is personal. This is something that we have to deal with if we as a country, as we as just human beings, are going to move forward and live peaceably with one another. There has to be some effort by white folks to reconcile with black folks, and that requires looking at these situations, staring them dead in the face, and seeing the wrong and trying to determine what to do about it.
Yeah. So, people, we told you we were going to go here. We started to go here last week. It's still relevant this week. It'll be relevant for the rest of Anthony and my life, and for our children and probably their children's life too, because in the context of this country, which a lot of people like to forget, this is we're not talking about old shit here. We're talking about a country that for hundreds of years has built the idea of freedom upon the kind of antithesis of that, right? Of marginalizing and oppressing particular people at particular times when it's helpful for the folks who are saying that we're this wonderful place. And it is not to say that the United States cannot be a wonderful place, and that it's not a wonderful place, and that there aren't amazing people here. But it is to say that conversations between people that, again, have the visual appearance of Anthony and myself, which is two white folks, don't have these conversations, and for sure don't have these conversations in the public eye, right? Public eye for us is like three people, but you get the idea, right? This will be a recorded conversation that we're talking about race, which doesn't happen, right? Or at least I'm unaware. We're unaware of this sort of thing. And so, I also saw the video of Ms. Romero yesterday morning. And then Anthony sent it to me in the afternoon. And it's, again, a situation where we're not really, in this case, we're not talking about all the details surrounding it. We're talking about in the video clip, Mr. Romero is handcuffed. He's handcuffed, and there are three officers. And for some reason, which I'm unaware of, they felt it necessary to take Mr. Romero to the ground. He was already handcuffed.
He says, you know, clearly that, you know, he's not doing anything. He's letting the officers know, hey guys, I'm complying. I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
And they, from there, slam him into the back of like an F-150.
Yeah.
And then one of the two officers, one is holding him by the cuffs. The other grabs his leg, and Cobra Kai swipes the other and slams him to the ground. And now he's hysterical, right?
The ground being concrete, just so early.
Yeah, being concrete. This is in a shopping center parking lot that this is happening. And the third officer then grabs Mr. Romero by the throat.
I think he just open home palm pressed on it. That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah.
So this isn't, you're just pushing down on someone's windpipe.
After he is already put to the ground by two officers, this third player finds it fit to push down on Mr. Romero's windpipe. Very little resistance. I think the only resistance I saw was like he kind of flailed his leg one time, but who wouldn't? You know, when you're in a situation like this, when you are literally scared for your life, you're in a very uncomfortable physical position.
Right.
And you are feeling as if you are being wrongfully treated. Physically, whose knee-jerk reaction wouldn't be to try to get out of that position? If you look at the video, it looks uncomfortable. Who wants to be there? And that's the only time in the video that you see that he may be non-compliant with the arrest. But that's only after he is taken down to the ground. And then on a, there are a few bursts there where the officer's got his palm on his throat and he says clearly, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe," yeah. and then passes out.
Yep.
I've got a an article that I was looking at where the officers, you know, were trying to kind of shake him out of that, you know, thinking that maybe he didn't pass out. But in the video footage, it appears that Mr. Merrow has kind of passed out. We don't know if he's lost consciousness or not, but the fact of the matter is, when you've got your damn hand on a man's throat, it can happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually looking at the police report here, too. And I kind of read a little bit of it yesterday. But,
yeah.
I mean, we don't want to get too lost in the details here, folks. But, because we don't know precisely what happened beforehand. Mr. Morrow is being charged with terroristic threats. Reckless driving and aggressive driving. Apparently someone threw a cup of coffee at his car and he followed them to Target or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not, again, quite sure when. So here's some context for me, right? To a specific situation where, well, not a specific situation in my case, but in a situation that is far more chaotic than that, right? Where I've been in situations where it's far less chaotic than that.
Yeah.
I'm not a police officer, right? But, like, if a fight is happening at school, I'm going to do my best to keep people safe. And that's kind of maybe a difference in perspective or whatever. But pretty cool dude named Tate Fletcher. He used to, in a former life, be a bodyguard and a bouncer at places. And he said, yep. You know, when you hit people, it causes a scene. So when you strike people, it causes a scene, everyone, whatever, whatever. But when you, you know, put your hands on someone, you can make things happen very calmly, right?
Right.
And everyone,
right.
You're in control, right? When someone's hand is behind their back, you're in control at that point, right? And it is then yours. When you put your hands on someone, you are responsible for their safety. And I take that into any situation where I'm put where it's potentially violent or whatever. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, right? But, and you remove the person from the danger. The difference here, people, is that Mr. Morrow was walking, but his hands were already cuffed and there's three officers, right? From what I see in the video and hear, I do not see or hear anything that would indicate to me that he is endangering all three of the officers' lives at the same time.
The video doesn't provide means for his treatment, essentially.
Yeah, and it's not to say, like, sure, he might have said some crazy stuff before the video started. I'm sure the police officers very well could have done the same, right?
Yeah.
But what we see in the video is we see Mr. Morrow walking with handcuffs, three officers around him, slammed into a truck, leg pulled out from under them, thrown to the ground, choked out. That's what we see.
Yeah.
By three officers. One guy. I don't know. I mean, and the issue here is even bigger than Mr. Morrow, right? Is that this, both Anthony and I have kids, right? And this is what is commonplace for the news, right? This is what's commonplace for what we hear about. It's not to say that 90% of the people don't coexist and blah, blah, blah. It is to say that this is still a reality in our country.
Yeah,
it's still a reality that people look to us and they're like, wow, that's, you know what? I'm not sure I want to go there. That doesn't look quite safe, you know, that sort of thing. What are your thoughts, man? What do you think?
Oh, man. I think that right now is a more perfect place than any to talk about Karen. Okay. And the reason for that is, you know, like you're saying, we want to, white people especially, want to pretend that America is better than it is, and that our law enforcement system is better than it is, when in reality, it's better for them.
Right.
You are seeing how these systems, and America being a system, you're seeing how these systems benefit you, and you're calling it good or bad based off of how it benefits you, without seeing how uneven the playing field is, and the mistreatment of black and brown bodies, versus sometimes even a worse context for white people, resulting in lesser punishment,
right,
or you know, behavior that's not as extreme as what happened with Mr. Mero. You brought this up to me yesterday, and I want you to kind of talk about it a little bit, because this is what we're talking about, folks.
Dude, this is insane. It's just getting crazier. So,
oh, Lord.
All right. So we're talking about what's her name? We're talking about this white lady.
Karen.
Karen something. Turner. Karen Turner. Turner. Who was previously the Port Authority commissioner for New York and New Jersey. And her daughter was pulled over. There's a 1-hour video of the whole stop.
What?
Yeah. And so Miss Turner's daughter was pulled over. And then mommy rolls up. And Miss Turner is, like I said, the Port Authority commissioner.
Right.
And, or commissioner of Port Authority. I don't know. We don't have a Port Authority here. So, regardless, she is a political position of high power.
Right.
And she proceeds to show up to a traffic stop that her daughter's involved in, and then berate, because there's nothing less than that, berate the officers, belittle the officers, right? And I'm watching the video here, and nothing happens. Right? Nothing happens to Miss Turner. She drives away. Her daughter drives away. They're not pulled from the car. They're out here standing next to the car having a conversation with the police officers. There's at least 6-foot white male, maybe even 2 6-foot white males involved in this thing. They're out of the car. They're free to stand outside of their car. Their hands are never put behind their back. Their hands are never placed on the hood. Now, the interesting thing about this is that where Ms. Turner, a black Port Authority commissioner, right?
Right, right.
Where she a black judge? Where she a black mayor? That these police officers just didn't notice, didn't recognize, or whatever. Because I don't know who Ms. Turner is until yesterday, right? No,
yeah.
I'm sure a couple people did, but she was being very disrespectful. Very disrespectful, talking about they're not smart enough to understand her sentence. Like, they can't put a sentence together, da 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 da. And yet, Miss Turner gets to walk away unscathed.
Oh, yeah.
Not thrown to the ground. She has all her teeth. She did not go unconscious. And maybe these police officers did a great job handling a disrespectful citizen.
Right.
I'm confused then. What is the difference between Miss Turner, who's being disrespectful and being rude and potentially threatening their jobs, right? Because she feels like That's her thing. And Mr. Morrow, who was not threatening their jobs, was just stating he didn't do anything and was not resisting. And again, we don't have the context of an hour-long dash cam video for this one, but we do have a video that throws him into a truck and then throws him on the ground and then chokes him out. We do have that video.
Right. And, you know, you can say all day long, you know, you weren't there, you didn't see, there, you know, we don't know all the details. You know, well, he was aggressively driving and following somebody into a parking lot. You know, yada, yada, yada. He made threats. He was going to kill some people. Well, he's going to kill people with a gun that he doesn't have because they didn't find a gun on him.
Yeah.
For one. But also, this is a common cop-out. This is an all too common cop out, I think, so that we don't have to have this conversation. We cast everything into the unknown so that now we don't have enough context or details to even begin the conversation. So if everything is in the gray, I can't talk about it because I don't have enough information to make an educated decision on whether it was right or wrong. But here, what we're talking about explicitly and exclusively is the video footage. It is the interaction with the police officers. Now, if you look at Ms. Karen's situation and her choice words for law enforcement, after her daughter is being pulled over for her God daughter, knows what.
She didn't get pulled over, people.
Yeah. She's she going to up. defend her daughter. And Mr. Morrow, who, again, in the video, we're not talking about the overall situation. We are talking about the video footage, is being detained and is compliant. But these three men found it necessary to be more aggressive, to swipe his legs, to push him into the concrete, to choke him out, and then he passes out. You know, and I don't, I'm going to go here because I think that, you know, I was thinking about this yesterday. I'm just like, man, like, why is this such a common place for black people? Yeah. And the only thing that I can really come to that helps me to make sense of this is that there is a subconscious fear of black and brown bodies,
mm-hmm.
Held by white people. I'm not going to just pin it as law enforcement because, again, we don't want this conversation to come off as, oh, these two guys hate the police. It's not that we hate the police. It is a mindset that we hate. It is white people not being able to own their mistakes and the mistakes of their ancestors. It is our inability to see our role in any effort to reconcile ourselves. Mm-hmm. And think that, you know, as long as I push this into that gray area, as long as I push this into the unknown, I don't have to have this conversation because it makes me uncomfortable.
And I don't have to take responsibility for this thing, right?
Right, right. And well, guess what? At this point, the only people who are taking any responsibility and feeling uncomfortable are the same people who are getting treated this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's it's just really interesting to me to observe, right? Like how the conversation takes place. Yeah. And this is an interesting part too, because geographically, this is not far from you, right?
Man, yeah. So another reason why, and I watched this video, and as I started getting more context from the article that I was reading and then from the video itself, I've stood in that same parking lot many times. My wife went through high school in Henry County. This is where this incident took place. And I've been in that same parking lot where Mr. Marrow was pushed to the ground and mistreated by those officers many a time. Even more than that, for those of you who don't know, my wife is biracial. Her brother, her sister, they are biracial. A grand part of my family on her side is African American. My stepdad is African American. This means a lot to me personally. Not only because I've been to this place, but because in my life, and the way that I have been groomed, and because of the family that I'm also married into, this makes this conversation that much more real to me.
Yeah.
Because there are black bodies, brown bodies involved in my life that now I'm looking at situations like this and thinking, man, this literally happened in my wife's backyard.
Mm-hmm.
This could have been any number of my family. You know, I'm looking at it as now being part of something that I'm connected to and not disconnected from.
And I think, go ahead, keep going.
No, I'm good.
And I think most people, if they pause for half a second, maybe not the same sort of connection that you and I might have, but know some people, right?
Right.
That would make this a much more relevant conversation if they were willing to have it, right? For those of you who don't know, all four of you, my wife is black, my stepson is black, my son, or my biological son, is biracial. My family on my wife's side is all black. Family on my side is, to my knowledge, all white. I don't know. And different from Anthony, my side of the family, at least, has, you know, it lives and has existed for quite some time in what would be considered the North. My folks are from Northern Indiana, about an hour out of Chicago. My wife's folks are from Southern Ohio. My mother-in-law was born in Georgia. And the my students are all black, with the exception of one. I have students who currently look like grown men, who are currently, I just looked at how big Mr. Morrow is, are his size or larger.
Yeah.
Right. Who have more facial hair than he has, who have more tattoos than he has. Right. And when they walk into a situation, when they walk into a place, that's how people see them.
Yeah.
Right. I've witnessed the wrong people be handcuffed, and those people being my students.
Yeah.
I've advocated for them and been removed from the room by officers. I've broken up more fights than I can count, and none of those times has a kid been choked. None of those times has someone been thrown into a truck or dropped in that matter. And none of those kids have been handcuffed, right? When you have someone's hands behind their back, they're not doing anything. they're not this. So, and the additionally to what we both said, right? We both have children, and these children have to grow up in this world. And the way this conversation seems to be going, that is not being had by white folks and being had by black folks and brown folks. So this is, sorry, this, I'm going to go on a different
kind of thought. That's fine.
And it's related. This is an important conversation for white folks to have with each other.
Yeah.
Because if you, obviously you can ask questions of understanding, right, of folks who might have a better perspective on it.
Right.
But if you're not questioning your own thoughts and your own perspectives and your own privilege in this situation, right, wondering why Ms. Turner wasn't thrown to the ground when she gets into police officer's face and calls him stupid over and over again at a traffic stop she wasn't involved in. Some could say that that's obstructing police. Some could say that.
Yeah.
You know? That you might have to examine the way in which you're viewing this stuff, right? Is it possible that you might not be seeing these situations from a lens that allows you to believe that it's possible that the framework, if we're talking about framework, of our society, the one we live in currently, both in the South and the North, is one that privileges the white body and the white perspective and the white whatever, right? And so if white folks don't start having those conversations and getting uncomfortable by themselves and then with people of color, but it's not people of color's job to explain this shit to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that I think is where, you know, the buzzword white privilege kind of comes into play, is that it is a privilege to not have to care about this stuff.
To not have to think about to if not your kid can walk down it. The street.
Right. You know, I heard it said once, and I'm sure I'm going to butcher it. But it's easy to not understand mistreatment if you've never been mistreated, or to not understand oppression because you've never been oppressed. You know, this is the common reality for white America, and we live in these bubbles. We watch our Fox News. We, you know, go outside and play cornhole, and nothing seems to bother us. But in reality, there is a large percentage of the population that is crying out just to be heard, to be understood, and we're too busy living in comfort and enjoying said comfort to get outside of that comfort, to get uncomfortable, and to just listen. You know, I know too many white people who have too little black friends or black connections in general that this conversation will not matter even after we have it, you know, is two white males in society are having this conversation. There are people that I care about who are going to listen to this conversation, and it's not going to matter to them because they don't have anything at risk here. They don't have black friends or black family to say, man, maybe this does matter. Maybe I do need to have this conversation. What if this happens to so-and-so? You know, this is a part of that comfort. This is a part of that privilege that you don't have to do that because you've never felt the things that the black body has felt. You've never gone through the things that black people have gone through in this country.
Right. Generationally. We're talking about one time a guy being thrown in the concrete.
Dear God, we are also not just talking about slavery. If I hear another white person talk about slavery being over, I'm going to shit a chicken. because
your sayings are hilarious, man.
Dude, I'm Southern as hell.
Yeah.
let's get beyond that, right? Let's talk about black codes. Let's talk about Jim Crow. Let's talk about the fact that the United States government, after slavery has officially ended, has structured its governing body in such a way that black people can only get jobs doing the same shit that they were doing when they were enslaved.
Yep.
And still can't make a living wage.
Yep.
And still aren't citizens.
Yep.
Let's talk about that. And that's within the last 200 years, right? Like, that's within the last 100 years.
50 years, 20 years, 10 years, this year.
Let's talk about, right, let's talk about segregation and the fact that, you know, our school systems haven't been integrated for that long, ever. Right? You know, this is not a, well, slavery is over and, you know, we're all living in harmony now. It's like, no, we're not living in harmony. You just don't care to open your eyes to this. You just don't care to look at it. Yeah, your kid goes to school with a black kid, but you have no context for what goes on in that kid's life. Your kid is not friends with that kid. You know, yeah, you go to the same shopping plaza as a black person, but that doesn't mean that there's equality. That just means that you share commonplace.
And equality and equity aren't the same thing. So, right, equality is this notion. I mean, I agree. But equality is this notion. There's this dope picture, right, where it has three folks trying to look over a fence into.
I've seen that picture, yeah.
And there's like a tall dude, a medium-sized dude, and a little guy, right? And they give them all the same size box to stand on. Well, the tall dude can still see. The medium guy is like, can't really see. And the short guy is nowhere near the fence. Equity is taking into account the context that we're in. Right. Right. And it's what I observe on a regular basis is not that. Right. And I don't know how it is where you live, Anthony, but where I live, people like to talk nice, right? There's not a ton of people. Since Trump's come in, there's been a lot of Confederate flags that fly around here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people think they're real slick with it. And they'll, what's...
I mean, I've seen them down here, but like...
Well, yeah.
You are not in the South. This That's not crazy, even a though. Part of the Confederacy.
They'll throw up a Confederate flag next to a thin blue line one, which is crazy, next to an American one.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah, so... What does it... Well... Right, so people talk real nice.
We're here already.
But then there's these structures that are put into the place, and they try and be slick with it, that intentionally disclude people, right? Intentionally make it so that those who historically have continue to gain, and those who historically have had not continue to have not. And where, like... In the context of Detroit, right? Detroit is predominantly black city, right? And that's the case because of this concept of white flight. There's a place called Grosse Pointe where we used to live on the towards the east side of Detroit in a place called West Village. You'd hop on the street called Kercheval. You head east. You get around this plant, you continue to head down east on Kercheval, and you would think that you could go into this city called Grosse Pointe, do your shopping at the fancy store, and then come back down that same street. But no, they make it so it is literally impossible to go into and come back from Detroit. There have been time and time again where actual roadblocks were put in the road to not allow people from Detroit to travel into this town.
Wow.
And this is just about as far north as you can get people, right? Like, this is not people don't run around burning crosses in Michigan. Instead, they... And that's also not what we're talking about, right? Because that's
I think that this kind of goes in line with, you know, what I was saying about how our policymaking is oppressive and isolates black people, or, you know, if we want to do a broader context, black and lower class peoples. Mm-hmm. And that seems like this is what that situation is this is a way of doing so without being blatantly racist or blatantly classist.
Right. I mean, and that's what housing, that's what happens with housing, schooling, access like, we don't, I mean, this is literally a conversation that'll go on forever. So let's bring it back to a black life.
Yeah, let's do
that,
it.
That this gentleman was just trying to get some breakfast. And I believe his breakfast, maybe his lunch. But he was I'm assuming, I don't know exactly. Oh, this is New York? Oh, it was in Tennessee.
Yeah.
This is in Tennessee, which is, do you guys claim Tennessee is the South?
Oh, it's definitely the South. Okay.
So they're in Tennessee.
They make whiskey, it's the South.
Okay. And it's in a Waffle House. And some guy, and I'm pretty sure he looks more like Anthony and I than anybody else.
Yeah.
Comes in and opens fire. And Mr. James Shaw Jr. is, again, just trying to eat. And
just wants his all-star breakfast, that's all.
And is that a thing there? I don't know.
That's the Waffle House breakfast. That is the thing. Okay. It is, I think it's a waffle, two pieces of toast with more butter than there is toast, two eggs, however you want them, grits, hash browns. If you don't opt to get them smothered, covered, and diced, and a breakfast meat of your choice. So yes, that is what you go to Waffle House for.
Got it. So, all right. So here's, CNN is not the best place for news, folks. Fox is terrible, but so CNN, I don't know if they're much better. But here's what CNN says.
Well, sure. I've got a Wall Street Journal article here too. So okay. I mean, it's saying if it says anything contrary, I'll let you know.
Perfect. Good. My grandfather
this
would be
people
proud.
Matters.
My
this
grandfather people. Would be proud. He loved the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
All right. So Shaw was sitting with a friend at the you can find this. It was written by Faith Karimi for CNN, updated at 2:58 p.m. on the 26th of April. All right, so Shaw was sitting with a friend at the Waffle House counter when a gunman wearing only a green jacket opened fire outside the diner, police said. Shaw bolted from his seat and slid along the ground to the restroom, he recalled. He kept an eye out for the gunman, and as soon as there was a pause in the shooting, Shaw ambushed him. I figured if I was going to die, he was going to have to work for it, he told reporters Sunday. Shaw charged at the man with the rifle, and they tussled for what felt like a minute, Shaw said. The barrel of the rifle was still hot when Shaw managed to wrestle it away, he said. He tossed it behind the counter, and the gunman fled. And then it just says they burned Shaw's hand and the wound on his elbow where a bullet grazed it.
I'm reading the same stuff.
So James Shaw Jr. is a black man who saved, I don't know how many lives that day, but he has since paid for the funerals of the folks who passed away in this shooting with
money that he raised.
Money, right? that people raised for him, right? Like, wow. Someone else started a GoFundMe for him, and he's using that money for it too.
Wow.
To pay for the funerals of the folks who passed. Again, this guy was just trying to get some waffles, right? Just trying to eat his breakfast, his all-star breakfast, I guess is what it's called.
Amen. Yes.
Oh man, that gets an amen.
Gets an amen. I have a place in my heart for the Waffle House.
All right. I've only been to one in Savannah, Georgia. But he saves lives, right? And yet,
right.
I
would assume that not many folks are gonna actually hear about this or talk about it, or that many white folks are, you know, still having the conversation that Mr. Shaw Jr. is a hero, right? And is a person who stepped up and helped a situation before law enforcement was able to get there. But, right, his body could have been assumed to be, right, someone else's, right? And he could have been just as mistreated in a different situation if the bias of, or this, the way our system works, of police officers had seen him in a different circumstance, right, other than being a hero. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts?
I had a thought. I'm trying to figure it out, so I'll try to talk through it. But yeah, this situation is one that, like you said, you know, we won't talk about. Here's the thought. Okay. No one is making a big deal out of this gentleman's heroism. No one is talking about it in the streets, but we have the nerve that when there is an altercation between black folks and white cops, that the cop is always right? We have our Blue Lives Matter campaigns, and you know, we'll talk for days and weeks, and on our news sources we will host debate about brutality in defense of white bodies, while not factoring in the treatment of black bodies. But when a man does something like this, right, when he selflessly thrusts himself into harm's way to protect others, he gets a pat on the back. When he, you know, pays for the funerals of, I didn't even know this until you sent it to me, but when he pays for the funerals of those who died in the incident, he gets a pat on the back. But that's it. It does nothing redeeming for the black narrative outside of this one isolated incident. This one guy did something good for him. But let it be the case that a black body is even considerably in the wrong, and by that I say that loosely, and I say that as graciously as I can, because I mean that very, you know, with a very broad stroke. You know, if the person looks like a thug, then they're a thug. That sort of thing. Like, if a black body is pinned against a white authority figure, then the go-to response to this is, well, you know, this person, you know, this black person is, you know, we don't know the whole story. We don't know what he said. We don't know who did this or who did that. We back the blue. We respect our officers, da 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 da. You know, it becomes this whole conversation where right. We are now living in defense of the white parties involved, and seemingly demeaning and making little of the black person's experience in this situation. And in a situation with the Waffle House hero, we don't get anything but a pat on the back. There's not news story, there's not debate, there's not buzz about that. But there is buzz when you pin the, you know, when you pin it in a situation like that that happened with Mr. Merrow and countless others, where there is gray area and there is room to misconstrue the context because we don't have the footage, because we don't have all of the facts. There's room to debate and argue it down, because the last thing we want is for our boys in blue to not be looked at as heroes.
100%. I mean, it's and that's the that's how we do things here, I guess, is that why would we assume anything else if it's a white individual involved in an incident? But
yeah,
you need a doctoral thesis to defend why a black person was in a meeting at Starbucks.
Right.
You need a you need four angles of video footage to prove that a black body wasn't there, or was holding a cell phone in their backyard, or was holding a pipe on a street, or was holding a can of soda and some candy, or was doing anything.
Yeah.
You need 45 different camera angles in the whole thing recorded to substantiate, in air quotes, anything that will even remotely look like anything positive coming out of it. And
and even then, most times nothing comes from it, nothing positive.
Yeah, I was just reading a little bit more about the situation of Starbucks. They're going to close all their stores on May 29th to give anti-bias training. It's my, I mean, so on a personal level, right, my super son is a black young man, right? And he's 8. He will this year be 9, next year be 10.
Yeah.
A couple years be 12. One day be 15. And I have no doubt that at some point in his life, someone's going to mistake him for a grown man when he's still a child. I have no doubt, if in this current reality, right? I have no doubt that it's possible for him to be playing at the park or walking down the street or whatever, and someone to assume that he's doing something or he is something that he's not. And just to put it frankly, I've had the conversation with my mother before, right? She didn't have to worry if my brother and I were walking down the street that someone was going to assume we were doing bad shit.
Right, right.
Regardless of what it was, she didn't have to worry about that. That is an actual fear for my wife, myself, and infinite black parents.
Yeah.
Right? And it doesn't go away. Right? It, just because your kid turns 18 doesn't mean it goes away. Right?
Yeah.
And that, you know, further illustrates the magnitude of this framework, the way that our society, our country has had this conversation or not had the conversation, and what it does to people in their everyday life, right? Where you have to be, it sucks to tell my students that you have to be aware of how you carry yourself, right? It sucks to have to tell them, like, we need to be aware of how we interact with police officers. We need to be aware of how we interact with people in authority in authority positions, because the cost is too high if it goes the wrong way.
Yeah. Folks, get used to this conversation. It's not one that we'll have every week, but it is one that means a lot to our personal narratives and that of the world that we live in. It's something that we have to discuss. We can't shy away from this anymore. And Tyler and I wanted to begin the conversation and invite all of you into it, even if it's just you and a friend, or if you reach out to us and you know, we can, you know, help you to sort out some things. This is the very beginning of a conversation that can't go without being had any longer. And
And I think
I'm glad to have it with you.
I appreciate you, sir, and I appreciate folks for listening. I know it's not easy. It's not going to be easy, and we're not special for having this conversation. I think, though, it's an important place to start, and it's important to, with folks in your life who, like Anthony said, shoot us either a message, we can have the conversation, but it's important to have conversations that are challenging with people you care about and with people who can help your perspective evolve and
that's right.
can help you see things from multiple perspectives. And I can better now than 2, 3, 4 years ago see the perspective of police officers, right? I've intentionally engaged in conversation with police officers, both in person and via social media, to get a deeper understanding of their perspectives. Even with that, right? Yeah. And having hours and hours of conversation, everything Anthony and I say is said today is still relevant. And it's gonna have to start with a conversation, and that conversation will probably go on for the rest of your life, and it'll probably be uncomfortable, and it'll probably might burn some bridges. Hopefully not. Right? Hopefully it's a conversation that builds relationships, but then it's gonna have to, in one way or another, move into some mindful action in our lives, right? And I am just as much a part of this as everyone else, right? We are just as much a part of this, but this a conversation is the beginning, and this is the beginning of us having this conversation. And we'll, like Anthony said, we're gonna bring more people on to talk about it in ways that he and I cannot. Right, because I walk through this world as a bearded, tattooed white man who no one bothers. Right, no one assumes I'm bad because I've a beard and tattoos and whatever. Right, we're both in that could be described as that in that way, and yet no one assumes negative things about us. Right, yet. Folks who have a much cleaner perspective than either of us, and Anthony is much more put together than I am, but have to be mindful of the way they walk in this world.
Right.
And it is because of that that this conversation will remain relative and relevant, excuse me.
It's relative to some people, and that's the sad part about it.
Yeah. And we appreciate you listening. And if you, like Anthony said, if you would like to join the conversation, please let us know. Ready to wrap things up, dude?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. So go for it. You do it today.
Here's Tyler's one-liner. It's an invitation to a conversation, guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your time. Again, just start the conversation where you are. Start having it with yourself. Start having it with your news. Start having it with friends. The books you read. Get outside of your typical context and worldview and search these things out, because they matter, and we want them to matter to you, because ultimately we don't want to just have a conversation about black and white, but we want to build a better world for generations to come. And it starts with discourse. So we'll continue this conversation again. Maybe not next week, maybe not for another month, but we look forward to hearing from you guys. We thank you again for listening. Y'all have a good day.